Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riismandel. I'm your host. On today's program, independent publishing, sometimes mistaken for pamphlets, they're called zines. And gosh, we haven't talked about them on the show in quite some time, so I'm happy to welcome back Media Geek's resident zine queen, Anita Michael, who's going to catch us up on her favorite independently produced periodicals of the last year. Of course, we are also going to catch you up on what's going on out there in Washington and what they're going to do to our communications environment. Media Geek Headline News. You will want to stay tuned. Oh, the slow grind of drafting new telecommunications policy in Congress continues, while the fate of topics like network neutrality is still unknown. At issue is whether or not Congress will choose to preserve in law the present working of the Internet, where service providers do not filter, discriminate against, or block content based upon who created or provided it. While many congresspeople have spoken out in favor of passing legislation guaranteeing network neutrality, the large bell companies have firmly opposed such laws, and the Republican leadership in both the Senate and House have not pushed strongly for it either. Speaking after his panel's hearing on wireless technologies on March 14th, Senate Commerce Committee Chair Ted Stevens told reporters that he doesn't have any specific priorities for what he wants to see included in his committee's telecom bill, concluding, quote, "I want a bill," end quote. His colleagues in the House have reportedly reached an agreement on a bill that would re-regulate cable television by creating a national franchise for the telephone companies that want to start offering video services over their broadband lines. This bill is intended to speed the entry of companies like Verizon and AT&T into the cable TV markets in cities around the country without having to enter into individual negotiations with each municipality, as is currently required by law. There's no indication that the House Energy and Commerce Committee has reached any agreement on network neutrality, though. With the threat of a merger between the newly enlarged AT&T and Bell South looming large and midterm elections about a half year away, congresspeople from both parties seem a bit skittish about taking strong stands or advancing forceful policy. However, the House Judiciary Committee seems to be making a bid to ensure it has a significant role in shaping our telecommunications future, perhaps with an agenda somewhat opposed to the House Commerce Committee. Judiciary Chair James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin just announced plans to hold multiple hearings on communications policy this spring. The first hearing is intended to address consolidation in the communications industries, especially with regard to changes enacted with the 1996 Telecommunications Act. Sensenbrenner said the Judiciary Committee will also take up issues like telecom competition, antitrust laws, and network neutrality. Sensenbrenner often has been critical of the dominant bell companies. Therefore, observers predict that the Judiciary Committee is more likely to be receptive to drafting network neutrality legislation than the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Yet, Representative Chip Pickering of Mississippi indicated on March 16th that he is working with Energy and Commerce Committee leaders to fashion network neutrality provisions that would clarify that the FCC has authority to enforce network neutrality principles it enunciated last August. At some point, Pickering added, the FCC would need to study the market to determine whether broadband access providers were harming competitors through discriminatory practices, a regulatory exercise that might occur without a working definition of network neutrality. Of course, lost in that particular debate is not whether it would hurt competitors, but whether or not they are hurting independent media and content producers who might be filtered out by the likes of AT&T and Verizon if they get their way. So I'm trying to keep track of what's going on in Washington. This is one of the most important issues. I say it every week, and it has not changed. I'm going to try and keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on with our telecom legislation in this big year as Congress tries to update the Telecom Act of 1996, as well the FCC looking to tackle media ownership once again this year. So as these changes come by, you can rely on MediaGeek to bring it to you. Also, check it out online, www.mediageek.org. That's the MediaGeek blog, where I try to bring you frequently updated stuff about these legislation things, about independent, about cool things I find. It's a little bit more fast and loose than a radio show, and of course, there's a lot more space for me to type away. www.mediageek.org, and of course, the radio show can be downloaded at radio.mediageek.net. You can also get the podcast, so it's automatically downloaded to your computer in case you miss it, in case you want to hear it again. All there, MediaGeek.net. If you have comments, Paul at MediaGeek.org. So through the month of March here, I've been trying to take a look back. It's the fourth anniversary of this radio program, which, as I've said, I'm kind of surprised we've made it this far. And I'm very thankful to Community Radio WEFT here in Champaign, Illinois, the home of Media Geek, for giving me the opportunity to try out this program here on a weekly basis. And something I did early on in the first couple of years of the program is I did a lot of focusing on independent publications, on zines. And part of that was because my friend Anita Michael was living here in Champaign-Urbana. She's been a longtime zine maker, someone who has written on the topic of zining. And is really well connected within that world. And for those who haven't heard of zines, these are independently produced periodicals, often very personal in nature, often photocopied, pasted up, definitely not corporate, definitely not mainstream. And they reached sort of some mainstream fame of sorts in the 90s with the rise of so-called alternative culture. And a lot of people after that thought they fell off the map, especially since, you know, the internet is supposed to give us all our publishing platform, and blogs and MySpace is supposed to have driven all that stuff away. But zines, independently produced periodicals, have continued to soldier on. And so rather than go back into the archives and listen to an old zine segment with Anita, I said, well, hey, she may not be living here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois anymore, but she has a phone. So I gave her a call and asked her to tell us what's going on, what's cool in zines. So Anita, you're now in Philadelphia, right? And what is the status of Low Hug and Associated Productions?
Well, it's no longer called Low Hug. It is now called Syndicate Product. I changed the name basically because I got tired of defining what a Low Hug was and seeing it typoed as Low Hung. And people thinking it was a sex zine. So for the last time, a Low Hug, the title was inspired by a picture of Richard Nixon at the 72 convention, and Sammy Davis Jr., who had been performing, was just so overwhelmed by Nixon's speech about how he was going to do good things for the people and for the black people of America. And Sammy ran out and just gave him a big low hug from behind. And the picture of the, you know, Nixon is just standing there looking uncomfortable, just like, okay, Sammy, okay. But it was a low hug.
Right.
And that was the inspiration for the zine title, and it worked for 10 issues, and then I just decided it was time for a change.
So, do you have any new publications?
I did number 11 a couple months ago. I haven't really done anything since. I am booting around ideas, and I've got a couple good ideas coming up for the next issue. I'm thinking about maybe doing a music-themed issue again. I haven't done one of those in a long time. So I figure as long as I do one really monstrous, thick, 60-plus page issue a year, I'm happy.
So you've got some good zines together. You can bring us up to date, because I feel like I really haven't done enough zine stuff since you moved away. And it's like this big gaping hole in the Media Geek universe. So I'm really glad you agreed to tell us some more about some of your favorite zines of the last 12 months or so.
Yeah, I'd say about the past 12 months. There was a lot of really good stuff out last year. And the first thing everybody needs to do is go out and order up the brand new Best Zine Ever, which is put out by Greg Beans out in Portland, which is probably the zine mecca of the country. Every year he solicits zine editors to submit, you know, little descriptions of zines they liked, and he puts it out every year. This year the issue is really thick. It's about twice the size of the previous one. And if you just send them a couple stamps, we'll send you a copy. And it's the best way to get hooked up with a lot of really high quality stuff.
Okay. And you'll give me the address for that so we can post it to the Media Geek website,
yes.
Right?
Cool. Yes. You can check the Media Geek website right after this broadcast and find all the info. So looking through everything from about the past year or so, the big theme that seemed to kind of emerge actually was zine editors getting older and being struck by illnesses. So a couple of my favorite zines, a lot of them just dealt with aging. There's a zine called Here Be Dragons that had been on, this is the first issue in about 3 or 4 years. And it's done by two guys in Pittsburgh who are members of the Mr. Roboto Collective, which is kind of like it's a punk collective. They have shows, they have a library, they have a meeting space. And it's the Punks Over 30 issue. And there's a lot of really great stuff in there. They talk about getting married, buying houses, but still trying to do things, stick to their ideals. And do you mind if I read a little bit?
No, please give us a segment.
Okay. This is from Here Be Dragons, and this is Mike Q talking about a little bit about his wedding. So that was our wedding. Emma wore red shoes. I quoted my favorite band lyrics in my vows. We exited to Someone to Love by Queen. 98% of the food was vegan. We had our friend DJ, and he didn't play any crappy-ass music. Nobody read 1 Corinthians 13. The floral arrangements for the tables were made of living native plants. We put together a zine with information about us and our wedding and what everything meant to us. We got tattoos instead of giving each other rings. We invited everyone back to the house after the reception to have a big party until late into the night. We had the most amazing day of our lives, and in turn, I think that made our wedding an event that could be an inspiring event for our friends and family. Yeah, so throughout the zine, there's just kind of essays from both the editors about that you can get married and still stick to punk ideals, or you can buy a house. You can do grown-up things, but still not sell out, basically. It is possible. And in my little review of this, I wrote that it should be read by every little 17-year-old snotty punk kid. So
that who thinks that they'll never sell out, who
exactly.
thinks that their life will never change from the way it is at 17.
Exactly. And it does. And, you know, you can get married and still be cool, and you can, you know, own a house and still, you know, not sell out, so to speak. You can own a house responsibly.
That's right, and not have to fill it up with Chemlon chemicals and immediately have to, you know, get a house that's got, you know, 40,000 square feet and 3-car garage and buy a Hummer.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see, like Mike Q also wrote, you know, the house they bought, it was kind of in a dilapidated neighborhood, but, you know, they actually got to know their neighbors. They made an effort to know their neighbors, which is rare these days. And it was kind of good. And I'm really glad to see this zine back, because I had read some previous issues and was just really impressed with it. So I'm glad that's back.
Yeah, sounds pretty cool.
Also in the turning milestone ages, Anne Halliday of the East Village Inky turned 40 last year. And she wrote about it in her zine. So there's that.
And the East Village Inky, I mean, it's kind of a venerable zine. It's been around quite some time. Maybe you could tell us more about it.
30 now. She's actually written a few books. Her most recent book was called Job Hopper, which was actually quite funny. It was about all these terrible jobs she had had growing up. She's more of the one, you know, more of the well-known, you know, zine people out there. But I still respect the fact that, I mean, she still mails all her own zines. If you order from her, you will still get a nice note, you know, in a handwritten envelope and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see, Al Burian of Burn Collector.
Oh, yes.
Al.
And Mile Marker, which I guess is, which has
yes.
a new album and is touring, which is his sort of art punk band out of Chicago.
Yes. And he was also in the movie Good Grief. So he put out Burn Collector 13, which was really nicely done. It was a square one. It was five inches square, really nice in the hand and everything. And let's see, he talks about going to a family reunion in Germany. And he wrote, "A family reunion. I have nothing to show or tell. My only purpose at any of these functions is as a statistical aberration, dead-end DNA of the family tree. But why can I not enjoy my failures in the privacy of my own room, away from the prying eyes of relatives?" So,
yeah, I really enjoyed that issue. I picked that one up sometime last year. Can't even remember where. And I would say amongst zinesters, amongst people who are just have a flair for writing, Al Berrien comes close to the top of the list in my book.
Yes.
And we were lucky enough to have him read at the Independent Media Center a few years ago for one of the...
Yes, he did the purple wigs.
Mm-hmm.
Or powdered wigs.
Mm-hmm.
And he started singing, yes, purple wigs or powdered wigs to Purple Rain.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And he's even one of the best zine readers I've ever seen. He's really quite a talent. And he's definitely an example of somebody who can do all these things. And he certainly has come not at all close to selling out, I don't think.
No, not selling out or growing up is that he's growing older and more mature, but, he still isn't the suburban. I never see him as the suburban type. And actually, the next one I want to talk about actually comes from White Plains, New York, which is, a suburb of Manhattan.
Of sorts, yeah.
Of sorts, yeah. I guess it's a bit of a ride. And it's one I've probably mentioned before, and it's been around for a while. It's called Offline.
Mm-hmm.
And Vincent Romano and his partner, Claire. And the issue in question here is called The Embarrassing Issue. And I thought this was pretty interesting. What Vincent did was write about embarrassing moments for the first 22 years of his life. It took a lot of nerve to put some of this stuff down.
Really?
It was really good. And also, there's contributions in there from other people of their embarrassing moments. There's some great stuff in here. There's a truly horrendous hair day about this poor woman who basically fried her hair off with sun in. There's one in here from me about my Canadian language problem.
What is your Canadian language problem?
Yeah, I can read it. This appeared in Offline number 34, The Embarrassing Issue, and it's called Oh, Canada. In the early 1990s, I lived in Center City, Philadelphia. While I had a television, my neighborhood was not yet wired for cable, so my viewing was limited to staticky broadcasts of local stations. One day, a bizarre VHF station appeared on Channel 9, only available with an antenna. I never learned much about this phantom station. There were rumors that it was broadcasting from Center City somewhere, but to this day I still don't know its origin. This mysterious Channel 9 showed all sorts of truly weird programming commercial-free. It was like unlicensed cable access programming. They would show The Wally George Show, a bizarre ranting right-wing program from a man who also happened to be the father of actress Rebecca De Mornay. Strange psychotropic movies would turn up at all hours, and Ed Wood films like Plan 9 from Outer Space. I kept the television on in the background set to the station because I was curious about what would turn up next. It was as close to television anarchy as you can get at the time. Often, this channel broadcast much music from Toronto, the Canadian version of MTV. It was fun seeing strange videos from bands I had never heard of, or really ancient low-tech videos from Canadian icons Rush and Triumph. While the broadcast quality was never quite clear, the audio tracks were especially muffled. It was interesting to watch. One day, my musician friend Steve was hanging out, and we were watching Much Music on Channel 9. One of the VJs came on, and we couldn't comprehend a word she said because of the poor quality of the feed. Steve asked me, "Did you understand any of that?" And sincerely, without hesitation or joking, I replied, "No, she must be speaking Canadian." Steve looked at me silently for a minute, perhaps wondering if I was making a joke. When it became clear that I wasn't, it took another minute of him looking at me funny to realize that I had made one of the stupidest comments ever. From then on, speaking Canadian became our inside joke for when we couldn't understand what someone was saying or singing. Ironically, almost 15 years later, I became an officially landed Canadian resident. At least I know how to speak the language, eh?
And we'll take a moment now to remind you that you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. Check it out online, www.mediageek.net. And we are talking about zines, independently produced, often photocopied, always interesting, and never corporate mainstream media. I'm talking with Anita Michael, formerly of Low Hug Zine, now of the new Syndicate product zine.
And you can check her out, lohug.blogspot.com. And she'll have a new site very soon, so you can check it out right there. And all the zines we're talking about in this interview, you can learn more at the Media Geek website, mediageek.net. We now return to this interview with Anita Michael about the newest, freshest, coolest zines on the scene.
And then, as also I mentioned, besides zine getting editors getting older, a lot of them have been writing about being sick, which I guess it's a part of getting older, although unfortunately the people who are sick aren't really that old. They're in their 30s. Dave Roche, who does the excellent On Subbing, which I'll talk about in a minute, has Crohn's disease, which I believe is your intestines don't absorb the nutrients from food.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly medically sure. But he did a little one-shot zine called About My Disappearance, which was all about being diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and all the horrible things, leading up to, like, what is wrong with me? And then finally, learning he has Crohn's disease, going through some surgery and learning how to manage things. And it was a really, really compelling read. It wasn't one of those tragedy of the week movie things. I mean, he basically laid it all out and told it how it is. Like, for example, here, this is from the section called Self-Portrait at 30. And I'll do some editing here. Okay. I pooped myself 3 times over 4 days. Do you know what that does to your confidence, to your self-esteem? I had diarrhea 5 times a day for more than a month and a half. I had no appetite and couldn't eat more than a can of soup and half a peanut butter and jelly sandwich a day. I figured I lost about 1 pound a day, dropping to 99 pounds after a little more than a month. I never had any energy, and I spent most of my day in bed. Between the fevers and having to run to the bathroom, I never got more than 3 hours of sleep in a row. I always felt half asleep, if not half dead. Every trip to the bathroom and every meal, no matter how small, was followed by debilitating abdominal pains, forcing me to lie curled up in bed until it subsided into a manageable dull ache. Is this pretty harrowing?
Yeah.
He had a really good support system. This was at the time. He was living in Portland at the time, and actually I've heard rumors that he's actually relocated to Philadelphia, although I have not yet found him. It's a very good zine. It's interesting in the fact that, and I'll mention this a little bit later, it's a zine about something you don't normally read about in zines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really interesting to give perspective on, this is what's wrong with me, and, here's how I handle it. There was another zine out there last year called Broken Hipster, and it was about a woman who had kidney failure, and she was going through dialysis, and then finally, I think in Broken Hipster number 3, it is her transplant zine.
Hmm.
I haven't read number 3 yet, but number 1 and 2 were very good. Yeah, again, something you don't normally read about in zines, but it's a different perspective than what you get from the mainstream media.
Well, yeah, and you normally wouldn't read anywhere because these are really first-person accounts, but I think first-person accounts for people are probably, in a way, their writing is trying to make sense of their own experiences.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, when you're going through what Dave went through, it's just how else, besides writing it down and getting it all out, I think it's probably one of the best ways to make sense of it.
One thing that kind of sticks out to me here is that, you talk about the zinesters, getting older and zinesters, getting sick. And I keep thinking, wow, these folks are like my age. And I have to reflect and go, well, but I'm interested in zining. I'm in my mid-30s. So, and it's not, and yet, teenagers and young adults are still making zines and stuff. But what's cool is that this youth culture, right, is sticking on with people. And it doesn't mean that it's turning into baby boomer culture, or I think that it's changing from its normal form. It's just getting broader.
Exactly. I mean, there was a big explosion of parenting and mom zines the past couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it's people who did zines and they just happen to have kids and they still want to do a zine. As speaking of something that I have absolutely absolute no experience in, this girl named Megan did this zine called Dancing Away from Home. And it was about being in ballet school for 5 years, living away from home and studying professional ballet. and how it was, and then why she just finally decided to give it up. And that's just something I had nothing, I never had thought about, you know, never wondered, like, gee, what would it be like to be a ballerina? But it's just, it was a really great story. And I hope she does more with that. Oh, another old favorite resurfaced this year called Breakfast, which was all about breakfast, which is kind of fun.
Your favorite meal?
It is my favorite meal. He recently moved, Vincent, recently moved to San Francisco for graduate school. And I'll tell you, if you ever go to San Francisco, you've got to get a copy of the zine because it's just every breakfast place is reviewed, and it's lovely.
I wish I'd had it. I was there a few months ago.
The last one I want to mention is Caboose, which is it's number 5. It's been out for a while. It's by Liz Mason, who is also one of the zine queens at Quimby's in Chicago. What was great about this issue is that she had been tapped to be on a reality show as a zine expert.
On a reality show?
Yeah, it's this daily show. I think it's called Moving On or Starting Over or something like that, and they take 5 or 6 women who are going through transitional points in their lives, and they all live in a house.
I think my mom watches that.
Yeah, the first couple seasons were in Chicago. Now I think it's in L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
And for some reason, they wanted this one, like, spunky 20-some-year-old, and, you know, they wanted her to learn about zines or something like that, or she wanted to do a zine, and it's a really fascinating story about what Liz went through, about how the producers, well, can you tell us something about these pamphlets? And just completely not getting it. And, you know, they went through all this filming and all this taping, and, you know, in the end, I think maybe 30 seconds wound up on the show.
Nita, thanks so much. I know it feels like it's just a huge queue to get to, and I'm glad we were able to talk about so many zines. And we'll have to do this sooner rather than later.
Yes, so there won't be such a backlog.
We can keep our finger on the pulse of the zine world, which, you know, we've had websites, we've had blogging, we've had podcasting, and yet people still love their photocopiers and typewriters and paste up and everything else.
Doing glue sticks forever. Glue sticks for everybody. You don't need an iPod to make a zine.
And you don't need an iPod to listen to Media Geek either. You just need a radio. That was Anita Michael, who is the woman behind Syndicate Productions, the former Low Hug zine, lowhug.blogspot.com, the former and now still reigning zine queen of Media Geek, talking about her favorite zines and some interesting topics in zines of the last 12 months. If you want references to all those different publications we spoke about, go to the Media Geek website at mediageek.net. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm your host and producer, Paul Riesmandel, and I'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media, as well as our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at mediageek.net, where you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views about our media. You can also download the program at radio.mediageek.net or subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. That's all at mediageek.net. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Lowe. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some segments are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. And Media Geek is heard on 9 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Media Geek is free to air on your local community radio station, too. Just drop me a line at paul@mediageek.org. That email address is also good for any comments you want to send in about the program. Once again, that's paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.